Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It's Saturday, the 26th of November, Anno Domini 2016. Where did this year go to? And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Profiteers are trying to cash in on shortages of Apple's new Macintosh Pro notebook, with prices on eBay as high as 62% over list. Because the new laptops quickly went into back order, Apple's online store today said new orders would ship in 3 to 4 weeks. Actually, this is a couple days ago. Some of those who were near the front of the line were attempting to flip their purchases for a profit. One eBay seller posted a 15-inch MacBook Pro for $5,500, 62% above the list price of the same model when identically configured online. Others jacked up prices between 35 and 50%, although the final prices were eye-poppers as high as $6,500. Neither the product shortages nor the profiteering are out of the ordinary. Apple often takes weeks, sometimes months, to reach a balance between supply and demand for new hardware, and we won't get into the conspiracy theories as to why, but that gives sellers on eBay and other secondary markets the opportunity to capitalize on buyers who simply won't wait. A year ago, for instance, many sellers priced their new iPhone 6S Plus smartphones at up to 100% above Apple's unsubsidized list when that phone went into back order almost immediately after launch. While the 15-inch MacBook Pro with Touch Bar was more prevalent than its 13-inch sibling on eBay, the latter were also represented. One seller, for example, asked for 21% above list price for a customized 13-inch MacBook Pro. Ironically, some sellers had not yet received their systems from Apple, weakening their argument for higher prices. The new Macs are already being scalped online. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like to remind you, is the new Macs are already being scalped online. And your choices are, I'd pay double to get my hands on one. I'd pay a little more to get one now. I might take one for free. And meh. So far, we've got 27 votes. And meh is just slightly ahead of I might take one for free. Followed by nothing. Nobody would pay double or pay a little more to get one. But I know you'll have more to say about that. So if you scroll down on the right-hand side, underneath the search post, you'll see fascinating stuff. And the first choice there is forums. And the second forum down is poll discussion. And the first poll discussion, at least so far this week, is 26 November 16. Scalpers try to cash in on MacBook Pro shortage, and you can just join in the discussion there if you like. Alternately, you can just give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
We often see that with iPhones because they don't roll out into all countries simultaneously. So the usual story is you know, rich Hong Kong businessmen who want it immediately. And the irony is, you know, they're made in China, they get shipped to the U.S., purchased by mules, and sent back to China. So,
right.
Interesting. But would you wait a couple of weeks, and you get one yourself?
No, nobody wants, you know, when it's a cult.
Yeah.
I mean, there are people who buy Macs because they're wonderful machines, et cetera, but there are also cult members, and I think we all know that.
Yeah.
And when it's a cult, you have to be first.
Yeah, we have a customer that's kind of like that, and he is so annoyed that that he had to wait a day or two for his model to come in.
Yeah,
what's the other one? The AirPods, the wireless earbud phones, have not shipped yet, and you know, gotta have those. It's just I almost can understand it, but really? You can't wait a couple of days? Well, the problem now is if you try to order one now, it's 3 to 4 weeks. So the people that would have wanted something like that, they would have ordered it day one and would have it by now.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But it is a thing. Some people have to be the first one so that they can say they were first.
Yeah. Well, and I hope to God it's not like the will it blend people. Or
the people who just throw them.
How far they drop. Or the guy that shoots them with different caliber rifles.
Yep.
No, please.
Yep. As you remember, was it the last iPhone or this iPhone? People were angry because it looked identical. So nobody knew you had the new one.
Yeah. Which is typical of the S model.
Seriously?
Yeah. People were angry because if they took out their phone, nobody could tell it was the new phone, and they were angry about that.
So you have to get it in the new color.
Yep.
And 1 year, the new color was rose gold, sometimes called pink.
Yes.
So people had to get a pink phone to let you know it was the new one.
Yep, and they did.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, Apple makes amazing products, and there are lots of people who use them for legitimate reasons, but there are cultists.
Unique individuals.
And that's who we're talking about now. These are the fanatics who have to have them instantly.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah. And there were actually protests online and everything else that it didn't look different.
And every industry has people like that. Have you watching Jay Leno's Garage?
No.
It's on CNBC, I think it is. A weird channel for this car show.
With
all his cars? And he interviews people and finds weird stuff. I just watched an episode where he went to Joe Biden. And he's the original owner of a 1967 Vette. It was a wedding present from his father, who was a big Chevy dealer at the time.
Right.
Secret Service doesn't let president or vice president drive.
Right.
Just in case something goes wrong. So they had to be on a closed track, and you could see the government vans in the background playing with this beautiful, racing green convertible Corvette. And then this brand new 2016 turbocharged super whiz bang S7 Corvette comes up behind them and blows past them. And when they get out, it's Colin Powell. He is a huge Corvette guy, and so Joe and Colin were arguing with about who's got the better Vette.
That's very funny. That's very, very funny.
So Colin said his kids rebuilt the engine for him for Christmas last year, and he thought that was pretty cool. And then he got the bill. They sent him a bill. They said, "Well, Dad, we knew you were going to buy it anyway, so here you go."
Yeah, nice. Nice.
Taking advantage of Dad.
Yep. Right. So, yeah, car guys are almost as bad. You have to have, the oldest car now is, the classics, the ones that don't exist anymore.
Right.
The one-offs.
And in terms of Will It Blend, there's a YouTube channel.
Yep.
And the guy actually, it's essentially an ad for the blender.
Mm-hmm.
But he takes some amazing things and blends them, including iPhones.
Spam. He's going to blend spam. Yeah.
I think that blends.
Yeah. I saw one video they did. A guy in an old beat-up Volkswagen pulls into this big fancy company parking lot and parks there. And the hippie gets out and is wandering around. The president of the company comes out and says, What's that? And gets a forklift to come over, pick the car up, and throw it in a blender. And they shred the car. An industrial car shredder, and little bits of metal come out the other end.
Nice.
And I'm thinking, that was a pretty cool
little bug.
Yeah, exactly.
I had two bugs, and I loved them.
I had a bug. I loved it.
A 64
Holy
and
moly,
a 67.
So you can blend just about anything.
Yep. All right, we should probably go to the phones. Our first caller today is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
You guys are enjoying yourself too much this morning.
That's
good
truth.
Morning, or good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm calling because I'm having a problem with my Norton utility, which I love, and it's hogging memory.
What version, Larry?
What version?
Yep.
Let's see. Let me look at it.
Yeah, that has been a problem with Norton over the years.
Yeah,
it should be the latest version. I have a subscription to it. I like it, but let me see. I'm trying to see if I can find the latest version of it here.
That may be one thing to check is if there's any updates for it that have fixed issues.
Yeah, because that's one thing they took pride in. I think it was back around version, I want to say 7 or so.
Oh, yeah. I have Norton Internet Security 5 for Mac version 2.10.1.
Oh, says 11. I can't speak to that. But I know they did a complete rebuild from the ground up on both versions back in 2000, on version 7.
Yep.
Because it was such a memory hog and everything else that they said, okay, heck with it, because that was the biggest complaint.
Now, is this a new install?
It updates frequently. As I said, I have
not an update, an install. Is this a new install?
Or has it been installed and running for a while?
It's been installed and running for a while. I guess the answer is yes. As a matter of fact, it's about due to have the latest install again. I'm almost thinking maybe I don't want it and go to something else by looking at your Security Tango and some other suggestions. This thing says SIM Daemon, and I tried to find out what that is, and it looks like it's something from Symantec, which I guess owns Norton.
Yeah.
And
yep.
It just sucks up memory like mad. And sometimes this computer just sits there and it almost all but stalls while stuff happens in the background. They do tell you how to shut it off, but it'll just come right back and continue to work. And then there's a kernel task, which I'm not quite sure what that does, which is the largest memory hog. But
yeah, that does everything. That's low-level operating system itself. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, Norton's just right behind it by only a few steps, and I'm just so frustrated with it. But it does say that this is a Norton Internet Security 5 for Mac, version 2.10.11, and in parentheses it says 11. So I'm assuming I have the latest version, but I'd have to go try to download the latest and greatest. But I'm paying for this, and I'm a little frustrated with it now.
Yeah, it is a memory hog and always has been a memory hog. That's one of the few things I don't like about the Norton Security Suite. You could check the setup, see how often it's checking things. You know, it checks every time you download a program or update something. So if you're doing a lot of that stuff in the background, then it's going to be running, of course. But it's a memory hog. I mean, we see people all over the net, both Windows and Macintosh, people saying that it's a pig when it comes to memory. And that just is what it is.
And you can sometimes uninstall completely and then download a fresh copy and reinstall it. That may help. I can post a link on how to uninstall all the subpieces.
Okay, I found something, but you know, there's so many supposedly wizards out there on the internet. Sometimes you don't quite know who to trust, or whether or not it's going to do the right thing. But I found a couple of places, and then I said in idle time, so I turned idle time scan off. I don't know if that's really hurting me. The last scan that it did was that's because I turned it off. No wonder. Okay. I guess right now I went to the site and I looked at Security Tango and started looking at some of the other products for virus protection, because right now I'm just tired of this machine sitting back here, and then sometimes it'll start doing something and I'll see SysDame is really up there in the clouds with memory, and it's like the machine just stops working until this thing decides, oh, I'm done.
Yeah, it can. How much memory does the computer have in total?
Let me see about this.
All right, Larry, can you hold on, please?
Yes, I can.
We have to go take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And somehow we lost Larry.
Yeah, we lost him. I apologize if he wants to call back. We can continue talking about what we were talking with him, but I don't know what happened. And
yeah, he was looking for alternatives to Norton Antivirus on his Mac. I use Sophos, a free antivirus, which
is linked in the,
Security Tango. Yep. There's also Avast, but we've heard that they're bundling adware, I guess,
bloatware
in the installer. So you have to be careful when you're installing it.
Yeah, just don't go next, because what you're doing is accepting all these other add-ons.
Read every screen and understand it before you hit next.
The best thing I can tell folks, slow down.
Yep.
And just read what is on the screen.
Yep. Nobody wants to wait anymore.
No.
Yep. And, of course, Mac users should also use Malwarebytes. There is a version for the Mac.
Mm-hmm.
So you should use both just the way we tell Windows people to do. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Smiley. Nope, no Smiley either. We're having some phone issues, or Dave is just...
phone issues or Dave issues?
Dave issues. One or the other is happening here. Thank you. I know. Put your glasses back on. That's best. But we'll get to that in a minute. But, yeah, of course, everybody should be using one antivirus or another. And certainly, whatever antivirus you run, you should also run malware. Oh, Larry again? All right, Larry's back. Welcome back, Larry.
Oh, thanks, guys, for letting me get back in.
Yeah.
I had to answer your last question. I have 4 gigabytes of RAM.
Okay. That's not a lot anymore. So certainly more RAM would not be a bad idea. Everybody...
Then it won't run out of RAM as fast.
As fast, yeah. Here's the deal. Back in the day, 2 gig was fine. Then 4 gig was fine. But now really 8 gig is kind of a minimum. If you have less than that, you tend to slow your machine down pretty significantly, pretty quickly. As you run more and more things, and particularly when you're running something like Norton, Norton uses a lot of memory. It always has, and it always will. And the folks at Symantec now, don't seem eager to change that in any way.
Because it's easier to have the customer buy more memory.
It's easier to have the customer buy more memory. So, my suggestion is, certainly, you know, you don't even have to uninstall it. Just turn it off. Try one of the others. Try Sophos, as Steve said. That's free. It costs you nothing except a little installation time to do it. You should also run Malwarebytes. And of course, you should do a thorough check of your entire machine.
Okay. Now, I do have Malwarebytes and I run it regularly.
Good.
Yep. Yeah, that's a good one.
And they scan for different things. Sophos can scan for some of the what they call potentially unwanted programs.
Pups,
which I guess is better than saying crapware.
Yeah.
but they do different things. They can find different things, and so it's a good idea to run them both.
Well, we've said right along since, you know, spyware and malware has come out, and it's on both platforms. I mean, no one program can do it all.
Right.
You've got to have multiples because they look in different areas. So that's why on the PC side, we always tell folks super anti-spyware and Malwarebytes. Between the two of them, they cover both ends.
Right. And we're always reminding people, make sure you have good backups, because now we're seeing the ransomware stuff that encrypts your hard drive. And the easiest way around that is if you've got good, clean backups, just reformat, reinstall, and you're done.
Yep. We had a customer with a Mac server, and it got encrypted by Windows ransomware because one of the Windows PCs had the server volume mounted. And that means there's no decryption software for the Mac.
Right.
So I don't think they paid the ransom, but we were looking at decryption software you'd have to run on the Windows PC while you were mounted to the server.
Right.
So there are a couple of encryption ransomwares for the Mac as well. But if you shared files frequently with Windows users, you still have to have protection too.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think what I'm going to do right now is uninstall Norton, try a couple of the other products, and always do use malware since you guys suggested it a couple of years ago, and I'll see where that goes.
Yep.
And then just one last question for Dave. I purchased this Mac new in at the end of 2012. Is it possible to upgrade RAM in it?
That'd be a Steve question.
I get called. I get called Dave a lot because the last
there's
syllable,
a lot of things you get called a lot, but we don't use them here on air.
The last syllable's the same. They missed the first syllable.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, yes. I'm bringing up my list now.
Yeah, the silent E is the same.
Yeah. Whether it has two slots or four slots is the bigger question.
The end of E and the end of my name is silent too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. What
did you say it was a 2012?
2011. I mean, yes, I guess 2011 means that's when it was actually put together.
Right.
So don't know.
Bring that up. So that can go to 32 gigs of RAM and you have four slots.
Oh.
So your 4 gigs now is probably two twos and then you have two empty slots.
Uh-huh.
So you could put in two fours or two eights to upgrade the memory even more.
In general, the theory here is you only have a certain number of slots.
Okay.
And the amount of memory you can put in each one here, of course, would be an 8 gig stick in each slot for a total of 32 gigs.
Okay.
If you've got four ones, those have to be removed to change the amount of memory. Okay. But if you've got two twos, then you've got two more slots free.
And the system profiler will tell you what slots are used and what slots are free under about the Apple menu about this Mac and then the memory tab.
Okay, all right. Seems like this is a technology race.
It is that.
Okay.
You know, as I keep saying, the price of poker keeps going up.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Thanks.
Have a good day.
You too, Larry. Thank you.
And that's one of the reasons why we say if you buy a new computer today, 8 gig minimum, 16 better. Because in the next few years, programs now are used to 8 gigs. And then the next few years, they're going to be used to 16 gigs.
Yep.
So get as much as you can. Or make sure it can be upgraded later. We're seeing, in fact, it's an unfortunate situation in the Mac world. Almost all of Apple's computers, you cannot upgrade the RAM anymore. They're soldered down. And we are seeing that in the cheaper PCs, too. It's cheaper to solder the RAM down than to put a socket on it.
Yeah, yeah, however much RAM you think you need, get more.
Yeah, definitely.
Both Apple and Microsoft have lied to us for decades with their minimum amount of RAM.
You think?
It's technically true.
Technically,
the best kind of true.
Yeah, but that's like saying, I could drive from here to Chicago doing 40. I'll get there.
Yeah.
But not as fast as if I can do the speed limit.
Response time is measured with a calendar, but you can get there.
And you won't like it very much.
Yeah,
right.
Compared to doing, the legal limit, what you really need to do it.
Right.
And people want their computers to do more these days. You know, I just surf the web. Well, what do you surf on the web? Mm-hmm. YouTube videos, Facebook videos.
Yeah. Or they stream TV programs.
Or streaming video. Well,
I keep 10 tabs open.
Yeah.
Okay, 4 gig isn't going to do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, every computer has a profiler program that will show you how much memory you're currently using. You should use it, and if you're up near the top, you need more. Particularly if you're, take a look at the swap space you're using. If you're using swap, you don't have enough RAM. Done.
And the Mac has something they call memory pressure, which tells you how much of your memory you're using all the time.
Right.
You know, that's one thing somebody didn't understand, and I tried to explain to them. Like on my browser, both in Chrome and Firefox, I can have literally open on either one of them 6 to 8 tabs automatically because they're ones I use a lot. And they'll sit there and say, and one of them happens to be Facebook. Well, I messaged you and you didn't get back to me. Sorry, I didn't go over to that tab. Well, it said you were online. Yeah, but I was probably in one of the other tabs doing something and didn't go to that one. Well, you're just trying to ignore me. Okay, if that's the
attitude. I wasn't before, but I am now.
You're getting very close.
Yeah, exactly.
And folks don't realize that, yes, when you have all those tabs open, it says you're online or you're there. And if you don't answer them, some folks get ticked off. And it's like, I'm sorry, I got other things to do too.
Right, right. When my Facebook goes, I keep Facebook open in a different browser. And I go over and look at it pretty regularly. If it's my wife or my daughter, I will look at it and answer it.
Mm-hmm.
If not, it's there for my convenience, and I will get to it when I get to it.
Yeah, exactly. I won't even go to that. There was another whole conversation there that with an individual, I sit there and, no, I don't let that and text messages control my life.
That's right. Again, I look. If it's my wife or my daughter, I answer. I look at it and answer it immediately.
Yeah.
If it's not, then it waits for my convenience.
Well, then
you're not paying me. You don't own my time.
And they sit there and say, well, that's being rude or inconsiderate. They took the time to text you. Yeah, and I'll get back to them when it's convenient for me.
Right.
Just because they want an answer or doing it right now doesn't mean I'm a slave to this
device.
There is
no social contract that says I must answer you.
Yeah, and some folks think they have to.
Yeah.
It's dire straits. Oh, well, I gotta. No, you don't. And it would drive me nuts because I wouldn't look at the phone. Well, what if it's important? I just turn to him and say, you know what? It's still called a phone.
Right.
And if it's that important,
they'll call.
My family knows enough to pick up the phone and call me. I'm going to sit there and worry about texting.
And the most beautiful thing is that you can set ringtones.
Yes.
So when somebody calls, if it's my generic ringtone, I don't rush to answer it. I'm sorry, I don't. If it's somebody I care to hear from, I'll have set them a separate ringtone. And now they can, I will hear that. And then I will say, oh, that's my wife or my daughter or whoever it is. And I will answer the phone.
Yeah.
You know, so that works. But for text and stuff like that.
You want to annoy someone, let a phone ring while they're standing there. Aren't you going to get that?
No.
No.
Well, one, I'm talking to you right now. Yeah.
Right. I'm sorry. I thought you were more important than the phone. Apparently, I was wrong.
I just can't not know who it is.
Yeah. I agree. It makes me a little insane when those things happen. All right. Somehow we lost Smiley as well.
That must happen a lot, I guess.
What? That I don't answer the phone?
No, you get a little insane when
hold on.
Oh, I've been a little insane. I get a little insaner. I beg your pardon. I get a little insaner when that happens. All right, our next caller.
No, that's still Smiley there, but I got to
do it. Oh, we do have Smiley. All right.
Smiley, you're still there, right? Confused.
Yeah, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
I don't know. Can you hear us?
No.
I can hear you guys.
For some reason, the phone is acting weird.
Oh. Can you hear what I'm saying?
Yes, we can. Yeah, yeah. Go ahead. What's your question?
Oh, no, it's not a question. It's a program for Windows users. And it would be very helpful if they're ever talking to you guys or some other kind of a tech. You can take and print out the summary and have it right there in front of you, and it gives you all the information about your computer, your system, CPU, RAM, motherboard, graphics, storage, everything.
Excellent. What's the name of this program?
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
SPECCY.
Specky.
Specky, I guess you would call it. Or Specy?
Specky, yeah. For the specifications of your machine, the specs of your machine, the Specky. Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, excellent.
Okay.
Thanks. We'll look it up and we'll put a link on our website for it, too.
Yeah.
Well, I'd even put it in that on your...
Tango page.
Well, no, the other one there. Don't get old.
Okay.
Too late.
Yeah.
The one with your antivirus and everything, only the one, just have it in the window one.
Yeah, the security tango page. Yeah. Yeah.
Put it in there, great help for any Windows person.
All right. Excellent. Yep. Excellent. Thanks.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And the Mac has one kind of hidden called system information, where it tells you all of that stuff, you know, all the hardware deep into your computer, all the stuff on the USB bus, and a lot of people don't realize it's in there. Under the Apple menu, choose About This Mac, and then there's a button that says System Report.
Right. All right, let's get back to the phones. Our next caller is Richard from Greece, New York. What's up, Richard?
Hi. I've got a quick question. I don't know. I installed Windows 10 on my HP notebook. Since I did that, everything has slowed down. I had we ran a malware through it, and I had a check done, and everything's fine, but the tech told me Windows takes 1.0, and I have a 1.93 processor, and that's why things have slowed down. Would it be worth it to go back to Windows 8.1?
Well, I wouldn't go backwards, mainly because those operating systems less than 10 are either dead to the world or you know, about to be dead to the world, no longer supported.
Yeah.
But How much memory do you have in this notebook?
Yeah, that's a biggie.
I believe it's 8 gigabyte.
That's pretty good.
Wait, you know what? One other thing, though. And I ran into this with a few of the HPs. It can sit there and say, you know, yeah, it's Windows 10 compatible.
Right.
But then if you go to HP's website and do a check, if it's really compatible with Windows 10, they've got a whole laundry list that, of systems that they do not recommend. Even though Windows says, yes, your system can run it, HP recommends that you don't run Windows 10 on it because the drivers and everything else won't work on it.
So you may have to check HP's website for that specific model computer.
Yeah, I would. First check it because, yeah, you might be going back to Windows 8 because I had one other system where the person tried to get it. They got Windows in and got it up, and then it kept crashing. And I did some research, and that's how I found out. It was an HP laptop, and I had to take it back to Windows 8 because Windows 10 was not going to work, even though Windows Microsoft says, oh, yeah, it'll work. Yeah, it did, but for only a few minutes.
And you won't like it very much.
Yeah, no. It was slower than all get out, crashed quite often, hung up on different things.
Yeah, that's just what mine does. It does. Sometimes you'll be watching one, you'll be on one program, and it will just go out.
Yep. You might want to check that out, though.
Well, I guess the moral of the story is buy a new notebook or go back to Windows 8.1 or whatever.
Check the specs before you upgrade.
And what are you using it for again? What are you using this for?
You know, it's gotten to the point I don't use it that much. And when I do go back to use the notebook, if you don't use it for like a week or so, then you've got a real problem. It goes through these updates and everything else, and it's slower than all get out.
Look into a Chromebook.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're going to replace it.
Yeah.
And 99.9% of the time you're in your browser.
Yeah.
Right.
Take a look at a Chromebook. See if you can live with that.
Yeah, that would be the answer.
Okay. Well, hey, thanks for the help. I appreciate it.
No, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, people are finding that particularly, unless you're buying a very, very high-end notebook, there's just not a lot of oomph in notebooks these days. And Windows 10 doesn't necessarily run on them well. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 41 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz, 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Ray.
And I'm Steve Ray.
I have too much fun at this board.
You clearly do. And at 46 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. So pay attention to this. A low-tech but cunning malware program is worrying security researchers after it started spreading rapidly in the past week through a new attack vector by forcibly exploiting vulnerabilities in Facebook and LinkedIn. According to the Israeli security firm Checkpoint, security flaws in the two social networks allow a maliciously coded image file to download itself onto a user's computer. Users who notice the download and who then access the file, cause malicious code to install Locky ransomware onto their computers. Locky has been around since early this year, and we had talked a little bit about it earlier. It encrypts the victim's files and demands a payment of around half a Bitcoin, which currently is $365 for half a Bitcoin for the key. Previously, it had relied on a malicious macro in Word documents and spam emails, but Checkpoint says, in the past week, there's been a massive spread of the Locky ransomware via social media, particularly in its Facebook-based campaign. Checkpoint won't go into detail on how the exploit works. Until the vulnerability is patched by LinkedIn and Facebook, however, its researchers have claimed that the attackers have built a new capability to embed malicious code into an image file and successfully upload it to the social media website. The attackers exploit a misconfiguration on the social media infrastructure, on the social media infrastructure, to deliberately force their victims to download the image file. It happens in the background automatically You don't have to start it. This results in infection of the user's device as soon as the end user clicks on the downloaded file. As more people spend time on social networking sites, hackers have turned their focus to find a way into these platforms. Cybercriminals understand these sites are usually whitelisted, and for this reason, they are continually searching for new techniques to use social media as hosts for their malicious activities. Users are advised not to open any file. Pay attention, people. Users are advised not to open any file that has automatically downloaded, especially an image file with an unusual extension such as SVG, JS, or HTA, although benign-looking images could exploit the way Windows hides the file extension by default. When Locky encrypts a file, it will rename the file to the format uniquekey.locky. So when test.jpg, for example, is encrypted, it would be renamed something like F607 bunch of numbers.locky. The unique ID and other information are also embedded into the end of the encrypted file. Locky's mechanics are pretty much like every other ransomware package currently floating around in malware marketplaces. It leaves a ransom note text file called lockyrecoverinstructions.txt in each directory that has been encrypted, pointing to servers on the Tor anonymizing network, both via Tor directly and through internet relays, where the victim can make payment and changes the Windows background image to a graphic version of the same message. It also stores some of the data in the Windows registry file under HKCU software Locky. And the only real way, as I said a little earlier today, the easiest way to protect yourself from this is to make sure you have off-site backups.
Mm-hmm.
So all you have to do is wipe your machine, reinstall your operating system, and put back all your software and all your files.
That's all.
Well, it's better than paying $400 for a key that may or may not work at all.
See, that's where I like the way I'm doing things now.
No, I understand that, but let's talk about what other people have.
But what I'm going to say, though, no, let me just interrupt for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
That you, which I think you're going to bring up is, you know, they get these things and they go ahead and do it. They stop. And one thing I've always said is if you have to stop and think about something, an email or that program that you've gotten, you shouldn't do it. And this is one thing you and I have agreed on for years.
Yep. If you look at something that's suddenly downloading on your system and you think, I wonder what that is, don't open it.
Thank you.
Do not open it. So make sure you have backups. Make sure that you have good backups. Make sure you have backups that are not connected to the machine. As Steve said, if you've got them mounted, they could be encrypted as well.
Even on another computer.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you've got them mounted to that machine in some way, connected to that machine. One of my backups I do through FTP, so unless you know all of the FTP parameters, you can't get to it. I have to kick off a program to do that. So that's fairly secure.
And now we're getting into the season where, you know, a lot of stuff, it's come through, oh, you got a package waiting, or you got this or that. Yep. If you have to stop and think about it.
Well, that's the problem. They don't. Oh, yeah, I've got a package. Exactly. I better log in.
And that's one thing that Nick's pointing out here, and that's why I wanted to jump in, is that's the whole thing. Folks get so anxious, and like he was saying before, they get click happy. Boom, 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 boom. They click on stuff, and then they get infected. Yep. No, I didn't. Yeah, you did.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, you did.
Slow down, folks.
Yeah, people don't want to wait. They don't want to think. They just click.
And we hear that all the time at the store. Well, I didn't install that. Well, somebody using your computer did. No one else uses my computer.
Then you did.
Then you did.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there's no magic here. Now, these things will download to your machine, but if you don't click on them, if you don't open them, they don't install. So when you get something like that, delete it immediately. Now, the problem is with some computers like Macs and some PCs, when you click on a file, you see an interpretation of that file.
Preview.
Preview, a thumbnail. And that essentially runs the file.
Mm-hmm.
So what I do is I use Chrome OS. And you'll see at the bottom of the screen the things that have downloaded. If you right-click on that, you can delete it immediately. So that makes life a little easier.
But the folks don't take the time.
That's right.
You know, and how many years have you and I both been telling folks, It's like we might as well talk to the wall at times because, and folks, definitely this time of year, you're going to start getting all these scams and things because everybody is ordering online. Monday is Cyber Monday. So this is where they're really going to start hitting because, you know, folks are going to do a lot of ordering online, ordering this and ordering that. If you have to, and I've said this for over a decade, if you have to stop and think about this email or this program that you're getting, don't do it. It's that simple. Don't open it. Don't click on it. If it pops back up or if you know that person, call them and ask.
Yep.
You know, I mean, well, my friend sent it to me. That doesn't mean anything. They could be infected and it's coming to you.
Right. Or it could be somebody else who's just randomly using their email address.
Thank you. Yep.
So you definitely be suspicious, you know. And we've been saying this for decades as well. There are certain areas of a city when somebody walks up to you, you're a little suspicious.
Yeah.
You know, here, hey, I've got something great. I'd like to give this to you. You'd be a little suspicious. Pretty much anywhere in the city, quite frankly. You'd be a little suspicious. But when we're online, we don't care.
You're in the safety of your home.
You're in your home and you're safe.
You think.
But you're not safe and you're actually not in your home. You're out on the world wide web. And it's just like being out in the city. Anybody could be out there. Anybody could walk up to you. Anybody could offer you something that is, in fact, damaging to you. So our question to you is, are you backed up? Are you sure? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Well, I just had an interesting laptop. I worked on it, got it all cleaned up, sent it out. This was over like a week and a half ago. And all of a sudden I get a phone call. Well, I just turned this machine on and nothing's working. The keyboard's not working, not doing it, can't do anything. I go, huh? Bring it back in. Well, I don't think you cleaned it up. Bring it back in. Nobody's done anything to it. Okay.
Yeah.
Bring it on in. They brought it on in. And standing right there with them. I said, okay. Now you said you just booted this up yesterday? Okay. Yeah. Well, all right. Let's see what's going on here. Let's see what's been added since it left here. What do you mean? I said, well, I can look at the file history and see, you know, all the files that have come out. Turns out,
yeah.
The day after it left my shop,
yeah,
they were on the line and going to various sites in it, and this other stuff got installed.
Yep.
I said, no, this thing's been on. No, it hasn't. I said, right there's the date and time stamp that these files were added. Well, I'm going to have to check into this. I said, well, if you want me to clean it up, you know, I can do it again. Well, no, I'm going to go check on this.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have children?
Yeah.
Do you have pets that might have jumped on the keyboard and typed something?
You know, I didn't even bother going any further.
Yep. I tell people all the time, put a password. Well, that takes me time. Okay. Yes, it does. But you're more secure if you put it there.
I can't be bothered. Literally, a customer said to me, I can't be bothered to type that. All right. So then, you know, when someone screws up your computer, because they can sit down and get to it.
So,
yeah. Did you have a party this weekend? Yeah, but nobody used the computer. How do you know?
Just like nobody went through your medicine cabinet.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I tell people all the time, put a password on it. It only takes a minute. It's just some typing. It's a little bit extra typing. It's not a big deal. My wife got, she needed to use my computer because there are some things she needs to do that in Office that Office for the Mac doesn't do.
Mm-hmm.
That's a Microsoft issue. And so she got my laptop and she was kind of upset that every time she opened it up to do something, she had to type in a password. I said, yeah, I love you, but I don't care and I'm not going to change it.
No.
That's just not the way that it is. Go ahead.
So many computers now are coming with fingerprint reader.
Yep.
So you can use your smartwatch to unlock your computer or a fingerprint to unlock your computer.
Yeah. Yeah. So, your watch does, Nick.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't necessarily need to type a password anymore.
Yeah.
Right. On my Chromebook here, actually, it's linked to my phone. So if my phone is unlocked, which it is when I'm in my home network or when I'm wearing my watch.
Uh-huh.
And so if my phone is unlocked, this will unlock. So it
yeah, it's
chains nicely. That's fine. But if you were to steal it and be farther away than the 10 feet that Bluetooth works,
they're not going anywhere.
You're not getting it.
They're all dressed up, and no place to go.
Exactly right. So I feel fairly secure with that, and it's a nice balance between convenience and security.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that's the whole trouble, though. Folks don't want to take that extra step.
Nope. And then they get mad when somebody steals their identity.
Oh yeah.
Well, whose fault is that? You know, it's like leaving your car unlocked and the keys in the ignition, and then being upset when somebody takes your car. Okay, you're right. It's not your fault. But you know what? We're done for this hour. We're going to take a slightly longer break and then come back and do the whole dang thing all over again. So stay where you are. We'll take a little bio break, maybe stop at the refrigerator and grab a little something. And then we'll be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbite. It is truly great and gratefully member supported. Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Grease Rochester, a public service of the Grease Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Holy moly, it's Soundbites.
Really?
Yes. And, of course, you can give us a call. But in the meantime, I will... Wow. There we go. It is flashing.
You just got to speak up.
Apparently, I do, yes. I will read a news item. A Russian cybersecurity firm has issued a warning about a spate of remotely coordinated attacks on cash machines, ATMs. Hacks of bank centralized systems have made groups of ATMs issue cash simultaneously, a process known as touchless jackpotting, said Group IB. The machines have not been physically tampered with, it said, but money mules have waited around to grab the cash. Affected countries are said to include Armenia, Estonia, the Netherlands, Poland, Russia, Spain, and the UK. But the companies declined to name any specific banks. Dmitry Volkov from Group IB said successful attacks could net its perpetrators up to $400,000 at a time. We have seen such attacks in Russia since 2013, he said. The threat is critical. Attackers get access to an internal bank's network and critical information systems that allows them to rob the bank. Two cash machine manufacturers, Diebold Nixdorf and NCR Corporation, said that they were indeed aware of the threat. They are taking this to the next level in being able to attack a large number of machines at once, said Senior Director Nicholas Billet of Diebold Nixdorf. They know they will be caught fairly quickly, so they stage it in such a way that they can get cash from as many ATMs as they can before they get shut down. A recent report by Europol warned of the rise of cash machine-related malware, although it said skimming, which is using hardware to steal credit card information at the machine itself, was still more common. The new method of being done by somehow gaining access to the bank's central systems and infecting whole communities of ATMs simultaneously, hence multiplying the amount of money that can be stolen in a short time. Because criminals were collecting the cash in person, it made the crime more difficult to trace, he added. The classic way of solving online financial crime is follow the money. But when you can no longer do this, it is very hard to find out who is behind it, even though the evidence suggests that it is a very limited number of groups that have started perpetrating this type of crime. So do you still trust ATMs? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 1-800-790-0415. You know, we've seen over the years all those little pictures of ATMs where Windows XP has crashed on them.
I still see them.
Yeah, and they're still being used. That's why.
Screen of death, yeah.
So, you know, they're a little behind the times with those, and it's... it is what it is, you know, and if you're using... We all use ATMs. It's that convenience business.
Mm-hmm.
But now they found a way to exploit them that's very clever, but also semi-untraceable. Right. I mean, if the fact is that physical cash money is being spit out of the machine and you're right there to stuff it in your pockets and run away, maybe you put a cap over your face so they can't see you in the camera. How are they going to trace you?
Or you post on YouTube video on how to do it.
Well, yeah, there's a guy there. Yeah.
And to call him if you went in on the scam.
Right.
Hello, police.
Hello, police. Right. Exactly. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy. From Rochester, New York. What's up, Andy?
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. Hope your Thanksgiving is well.
Thanks. It was great. How was yours?
Oh, it's wonderful.
Good.
Number of weeks, I've been kind of tied up with other things, so I haven't been listening as much as I like to. But
what?
I'm sorry. It happens. the boss tells me what I got to do, and she prevails.
Yeah, she prevails.
A number of weeks ago, there was... a denial of service attack, shut down parts of the internet using the Internet of Things. Primarily what I read was DVRs, DVDs that are online.
Security cameras.
Yeah, things like that.
Internet's everything.
Yeah, so as somebody who has DVRs and DVD players, how does one keep them from being hijacked like that?
Change the default password. Is the biggest thing you can do. People leave the default password admin, and then the bad guys just scan the internet and log in.
And of course, mainly that's because most people, when you say change the default password, will say, these things have passwords?
Yeah.
Or they don't put a password on it to begin with.
I got a hamper?
Yeah. I got to be honest.
Yeah, you're one of them.
I've got three DVRs, and nowhere on the thing have I ever seen something that says password.
Yeah, you got to dig down into the... settings usually.
DVR may be controlled by the cable company or the DVR manufacturer. TV. Yeah.
Oh, that's possible.
None of the three are hooked to the internet.
Well, then you're probably safe. It's the Internet of Things devices that are on the internet, like doorbells and
no, your DVR is definitely on the internet. If you're getting programming through, let's say, that's your true. Cable company.
No. It's DirecTV. Satellite.
Your guide.
Same thing.
Yeah.
The stuff, if you can get outside stuff like a guide or a program, then there is a connection back to that vendor. Yeah?
No.
Yes.
Okay. None of these are wireless, and every one of them, if you're going to hook it to the internet to do demand programming and things like that, has to have a cable attached to it. I've never attached the cable.
You don't get programming, and you can't save TV shows onto it. Is that correct?
I can record the feed that comes through the satellite.
Yes, and that's a connection back to the manufacturer. Well, back to the provider.
Okay.
And if that provider has been infected, they can send a malicious code into your computer. It doesn't, when I say the internet, I don't mean the internet is more than just an Ethernet connection or a wireless connection into your machine and back to Google.
Okay.
It's pretty much, if I can get to DirecTV servers and DirecTV servers can get to you, then I can get to you.
And there was a specific, virus that was responsible in the Dyn attack that gets installed on the device, typically because there's still a default password. And then, you know, even restarting it or changing the password doesn't work because it's already infected.
Right. Now, there's not much they can do to you with that connection, because it's not connected into your personal network, but they weren't interested in you. They were interested in causing a disruption to the backbone of the internet, which they then just used machines to do that. So the reality is, if your machine is connected to anybody in any way, it can get infected, and you have to prevent that, protect the machine from that possibility of infection. Dave always talking about his Windows 7 machine that's not connected to the internet, and that's safe until he sticks a USB drive in it, and then it has been secondhand connected to the internet somehow. And so he needs to be aware of that and protect that connection, that USB drive, from carrying an infection into his theoretically disconnected machine.
And I just found a tech note for DirecTV that you have to call them to put a password on your device.
So the device is open without even having a password.
It probably has their DirecTV's default password.
Right, right, right. And
which
once
they don't broadcast.
Right.
Right. But if the bad guys get it, now they can get to your machine.
So you just call DirecTV customer service and you can give them what you want the password to be.
Right. So unless a computer is completely self-contained, and I mean completely unable to get any information ever from anywhere else, then it is vulnerable and you can consider it for this purpose to be, quote, on the internet, unquote.
Yeah, even sticking in a flash drive or a CD. There have been commercial programs from reputable vendors that have come with a virus on it. Usually, in the early days, it would come from the floppy disk manufacturer.
Yeah, I've heard that stuff. I guess the problem I'm having getting my head around this is that with my DVRs, yeah, they're hooked. They go out through the satellite. I mean, it goes up to a dish on my roof and talks to the satellite.
Yep.
All right? It's not connected physically to the internet.
Not at your end, but at the other end.
Let me finish. So how does a hacker take over my box to do some damage to somebody on the internet when there's no internet connection to the DVRs, and most of the time they're powered down?
They get in at the other end.
Right. They get in at the other end, and once you're connected to DirecTV, if DirecTV gets infected, that machine can then infect your box.
Okay. But where does it go from there?
Then it goes back up to the satellite. That is a two-way communication. It's not terribly fast. You're not a huge part of the problem, but it is a two-way communication.
Mm.
And it always has been. Not a good two-way communication.
In the early days, you had to use a telephone to send data up and then a satellite to get it back.
Right.
Yeah. And now they say plug an internet connection in the back of it so that you can do on-demand programming and things of that nature.
Right. Makes it convenient for you, but unfortunately, it adds a vulnerability to the bad guys.
Well,
right.
This is true. And I have never, because I don't, and you have to do it to do pay-per-view, which I don't do.
Right.
So I've never hooked up the cable to it.
Well, then maybe you're not part of the problem in the sense that you're not sending data back out, but data can still get to you. You can still get owned.
Okay. So it's kind of like a dead end.
It's a dead end, but you're still owned.
Okay.
And right now, that's not a big deal because you're not infecting, you're not part of the denial of service. But what happens the next time when they decide what they want to do is something else to intercept your programming? If you've got one of the things that people have a problem with nowadays is a lot of TVs have phones, cameras on them, and they may be able to turn that camera on and watch what you're doing. It may have a microphone, and they can hear what you're saying. They may just be interested in getting access to your information that you've got online. If you've got smart TV, they may have access to your Netflix password or your Amazon password or your Google password or any of those other things. Those are stored in that machine, and they will be vulnerable to it. And you may not have that now, but next time you buy a machine, there they are.
Okay.
So there's just lots and lots of that stuff.
All right. So if I call DirecTV and ask them to put a password on these things,
yep.
Then what happens? I have to put in the password every time I go into it?
No.
Maybe.
Well, maybe. I don't know. And you're right. I don't know. You'd have to ask them.
And the fact that they are typing the password in means they know the password, which means it's vulnerable at their end again. So for nothing you do, you could still be hacked at the other end.
Right. The simple fact is you've got a device in your home that is not controlled by you and can be attached to the internet.
Okay.
And unfortunately, that's becoming more and more common these days.
Right.
One of the things I've read for like putting cameras and stuff on the internet, protect your own network by putting them on your guest network.
Right.
Because most Wi-Fi routers now have a guest network that will not connect to your private network.
Okay.
So you're protected from attack by them, but your devices can still be used in an attack if you don't change the default password.
Right. And again, with many of these things, you put in your Amazon password or your Facebook password or your whatever password. And for many people, those are all the same password anyway.
And to make it easy to see your video camera when you're not at home, you create an account at the camera website company. And we had a story about that a few weeks ago where a guy bought a camera, made an account, watched his own video of himself for a while, decided he didn't like the camera, returned the camera. A couple of weeks later, he started getting notices that there was new video on his account. And the new owner who bought the camera was sending video feed to him because the company set their system up stupid. So that if a second person bought the same camera, the video went to the first person too. And that shouldn't happen.
Yep.
But it's becoming a race to market. These internet cameras, Internet of Things cameras are the big deal these days. And so a lot of companies aren't putting as much security into them as they should. And in this one example, the URL to see your camera feed was a serial number. And so the researchers just started putting other numbers in the URL and saw everyone else's camera too.
Yep. The reality is if you're connected in any way to any outside source, you are at some level connected to the internet.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
One thing I'm trying to find here. Steve Gibson's been talking about a router on Security Now. It's a 5-port smart router that gives you completely 5 separate internet segments.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Paul. What?
I say, with that type of music, we're all acting slow, smooth jazz.
Exactly, smooth jazz.
It's the tone of the music beds it.
Yeah,
they set up that.
Without even realizing it, we were doing it.
Yep. Hi, welcome back. We're grooving with you all night here on Jazz 90.1. And you were going to talk a moment about the Ubiquiti router.
Yeah, the Ubiquiti Edge Router X. It's a 5-port router.
Ubiquiti with an I, not a Y.
It's $50 on Amazon for 5 gigabit ports, and it will create five.
That's 5 1-gigabit ports.
Yeah, thank you. And it will give you 5 completely separated, logically and physically separated networks. So you can have one network for your in-house stuff. You can have one network for guests in your house. You can have one network for your Internet of Things devices. And they are all electronically and physically separated, so they cannot affect each other.
Nice.
Cool.
Nice. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Canandaigua, New York. Hiya, Paul. What's up?
How you doing?
Peachy.
I wonder if you'd give me a little help with my HP Windows 7 desktop.
Maybe.
It has problems after it wakes up from sleep mode.
Don't put it to sleep.
Yeah.
I've been doing it for years this way. And when I'm done in the morning, I close everything out and put it into sleep mode. And when I come back at night, I turn it on. And over the last 4 days, the following happens. I revive it. I get to the desktop. The mouse works. Everything works. I click on a browser icon to open a browser. That lights up a little bit. The hard drive gives 2 or 3 flashes and nothing happens.
Here's the one thing, Paul. Like you said, that's a Windows 7 machine?
Yeah.
And how old is it?
Let's see, 2000.
Yeah.
2010.
Yeah. That thing is getting old. It's getting tired. And what used to work for the longest time, as far as sleep mode and everything else, is starting to slow down and not work like a lot of the systems didn't like sleep mode to begin with. A lot of computers went into complete haywire if you tried to put them in sleep mode.
Right, right.
It's better not to do that because especially if you spin down that hard drive, if it's a laptop, you're better off to turn off. Don't let it spin down the hard drive. Just close the lid on it.
Well, no, this is a desktop.
All right, but still not. If you've got that hard drive or anything else going into sleep mode, it doesn't like it. It's getting old and doesn't want to do it anymore.
And it could be that a recent driver update update fail caused that one of the components to stop sleeping right or stop waking from sleep.
Right.
The hard drive, the video card, the Ethernet, any one of the components.
And here's the deal. Desktops... when particularly when they're old, when the older desktops were never designed to go into sleep mode.
Yeah.
They often did, and they often worked well. But as Steve said, as updates happen, since they were never designed for sleep mode, nobody writes that into the drivers anymore.
Just turn the monitor off. That's all I do.
Yeah.
Oh, you leave the hard drive running then.
Yeah. My Windows 7 machine is on all the time. All I do is turn off the monitor.
Okay. Okay.
And when I come back, want to use it, I just turn the monitor back on. Boom, it's there.
Yeah, it's been working for years this way, and I was just wondering. All of a sudden, it's for the last 4 days, it's done the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's most likely, as Steve said, it's probably something updated.
Yeah, that's what it seems strange. Yeah.
Yep.
The annoying part of it is my incremental backups become it does something. They become full backups every time over the last 4 days.
Yep. Leave it running. Leave it on. Don't go into sleep mode, and just turn your monitor off, or set the screen to go black, or whatever you want to do for that.
Okay. All righty. One other silly browser question.
Sure.
When I do a Google search or something like that, and one of the search results is a PDF file, and I go read the PDF, and then when I hit the back button to get back to the search results, it won't. It just keeps reloading the PDF, and I have to hit the back button like a machine gun to get it, and then it jumps 2 or 3 pages.
Yeah, that's...
Click and hold the back button to jump back 2 pages. The way that page was designed, it's opening the PDF as probably a script.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you go back to the previous page, it executes the script again.
Yeah, it's basically going back to the
previous
script.
It keeps repeating itself.
Yeah.
Yep.
Hold the back button down, and that will let you jump back 2 pages.
The other thing you can do is if you hold the control key down when you click on that link, it will open the PDF in a new browser tab, and then you can just close that tab.
Ah, okay. Okay, very good.
So that can be, if the back button doesn't do anything, that means you're in a new tab and there's nowhere to go back to.
Right, yeah, okay. Okay, very good. All right, thank you very much.
Yep.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
My wife runs into that now and then. It won't let me go back. Well, because you're in a new tab, there's no back to go to. You have to close that tab.
Yeah, right. And it's a feature that you can open up tabs with that. But, particularly now that the internet has gotten so PC-like, and they do that by running scripts, the simple mechanism of the back button doesn't necessarily always take you back anymore.
Yeah.
So that ability to open things as a new tab... you can also, if you have a 3-button mouse or 2 buttons and a scroll wheel, and the scroll wheel clicks, usually that middle click will also open a link in a new tab. Mm-hmm.
But then it's important not to lose track of your tabs. So many times we see people that have 15 Facebook tabs open because they didn't know it was there, so they made a new one.
Right. You got to be aware of what you're looking at and
how
that's going.
And then they wonder why the computer's slow. Well, you've got 15 Facebook tabs open, all playing their videos.
Right, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Webster, New York. Hiya, Jerry. What's up?
Hi, thank you. Just want to know, I've heard of an operating system called Mint. And what is that?
Mint?
M-I-N-T?
Yes. Mint is a version of Linux. And Linux is an operating system based on Unix. And it runs... runs the internet. The backbone of the internet is mostly Linux or Unix variants of some sort. Mint is you may have heard of Ubuntu or Red Hat. Those are also versions of Linux, and they're from different companies. And Mint is from a different company. You can find out much more about it. I believe it's, I'm going to type it in right now.
LinuxMint.com.
LinuxMint.com. Yep.
From freedom came elegance.
Right, right.
Is their slogan.
And it's a free operating system. They're up to version 18, Sarah. And they come in a couple of editions, Mate, XFCE, and one other, I think Cinnamon, maybe is it's called.
Yeah.
And all three of those are free for downloading. You can install them directly onto your machine, or you can run them from a thumb drive if you want to just play around with it and learn how they work. And they work very much like Windows or the Mac works. You have different types of programs. For example, instead of running Microsoft Office, you would run a program called LibreOffice. But it gives you a word processor, a spreadsheet, a database, a graphics program, all kinds of stuff. And it's completely compatible with Windows, with Office, Microsoft Office, so you can swap files back and forth. And it has its own browsers and its own, you know, name it. It's just an operating system like everything else is an operating system.
Is it good or bad? Is it something that's safe, or would you use it, I guess?
I use Ubuntu, but Mint is very similar. Yes, it is very safe. It is very usable. It has antivirus programs for it as well. It's called CLAM, AV. I don't remember what CLAM stands for, but it's an acronym for something. And, the idea behind Mint is that it frees you up from, Microsoft. So you don't have to pay the Microsoft tax, as it's called. For every copy, you know, the hundreds of dollars you pay for a copy of Windows. But it provides all the same features and functions for about 99% of the people. That's one of the nice things about it is free. You can download it and follow the directions to install it on a decent-sized USB stick and realize that it's going to be slower than running it natively because it's going through the USB and doing a lot of compressing and decompressing, but it gives you a flavor of what Linux would be like to use.
I see. And you can download it at this linuxmint.com?
Yep.
And how do you spell Linux? I'm not familiar with that at all. But
L-I-N-U-X.
U-X, okay.
linuxmint.com. And I would suggest before you download it, you read up on it. I've been using a version of Linux. Like I said, I've been using Ubuntu with XFCE. I've been using that for about almost 20 years now. I can do everything I need to do. There are very few program equivalents that you can't find for it. For example, I don't use Photoshop because I can't run Photoshop on Linux, but I can run something called the GIMP, the Graphics Image Manipulation Program, which does everything I would want to do in Photoshop, I can do in the GIMP. I can run the entire LibreOffice suite. I have multiple games. I have browsers. I have program editors. I have Thunderbird and Evolution if I want to do email. So you can do pretty much everything. It's just a matter of, at first, looking around and finding programs that do what you want to do. And you always, you know, there's communities out there. You can go to them and say, what's the best program to do X on Mint? And, of course, it's as we've always been saying, you already, you know, changing your operating system is like buying a new car. You already know how to drive. You just don't know where the controls are.
Mm-hmm. Is it pretty compatible with the antivirus programs that are there? Around.
Well, there are programs for it. As I said, it doesn't run any Windows program, but there are equivalent programs like CLAM, AV, and a couple of others that you can run on Linux. And in fact, the Security Tango at securitytango.com has a page under, if you go under Let Stance, you'll see the Linux Lombada, and that will show you some software that you can install, mostly Clam, which is free and works brilliantly. So you know, you'll need to install some bits and pieces. Installation of programs is a little different. Again, it's a little intimidating at first because it's a new set of controls, but you can install them either from the command line or from whatever. Usually there's a program called Software Sources or Software Installation, and you run that and it shows you all the software you can install, and you can type, for example, Office, and it'll show you the Office packages, and then you just click and say, I want this one, and you wait a minute while it installs, and you're done. And there are a billion programs, and 99.9% of them are free, and they all do exactly the same stuff that the Windows programs you pay for do.
And there are Linux users groups in town, similar to Mac and Windows users groups. The big one is probably Lugor, the Linux user group of Rochester. They currently are not holding technical meetings, but they do have a beer meetup at Quimby's and Winton near Jefferson, the third Thursday of the month. And you can go there, you can talk to people who use Lugor, and find people to help out and answer questions for you, too.
Okay, one last question. If you have Windows on your laptop or on your desktop, you have to get rid of that to get Mint?
You can. Most versions of Linux, and Mint is one of them, can be installed to dual boot. So when you first turn on your machine, you get a little menu, and you get to choose either Mint or Windows.
Oh, okay. All right.
But again, the easier thing to do is to put it on a buy yourself an 8 or 16 gig memory stick, put it on that, and then boot from that in order to play with it and learn and decide whether or not it's something you want to continue on with.
Okay, well, thank you very much. You've been very helpful.
Thank you. Enjoy. I'm a big fan of Linux, always have been. I use Ubuntu. I use Xubuntu, the XFCE version of Ubuntu. But there are lots and lots of versions. One of the beautiful things about Linux is that there are many alternatives for everything, including the front end. Mint has several different ones, Cinnamon and Mate and XFCE. So you pick the front end. The back end is all the same, you know, the mm-hmm. way the programs yeah. that run and the way that they work. But the front end, what the windows look like, where the menus are, things like that, can be changed pretty much in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't like the way they look, you can make a change fairly instantaneously. You can make it look like a Mac. You can make it look completely different from anything you've ever seen. There's all kinds of things you can do to play with it. It's pretty
and
nifty.
One thing you've said, though, over the years, though, it's great for an older machine that yep. doesn't have much horsepower, that can't run, say, the Windows 10 or the Windows 8. And, you know, still some life in the old Betsy that you want to get into it. And like I said, it's just a matter of taking the time and effort to learn the operating system.
Right. I've got an old laptop that's very old. It has only half a gig of RAM in it. And I run something called Damn Small Linux on it. There's another version called Puppy Linux. And both of those run phenomenally on it. It's designed for small machines.
The wonderful thing about Linux is there's so many to choose from.
Exactly. Got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Nick Francesco, you 40 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Wright.
And 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Bodan from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, buddy?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Got a question. A previous caller in the last hour was talking about AVG, or he had an issue with the Norton suite. I've noticed one thing. I did download the free version of AVG for my two computers, the new one, which is operating system 10 and an older model. And all of a sudden, after an update, I got a second icon on the the desktop. When you click on it, it's AVG Zen. Do I this? Can I install Zen without affecting the other main AVG anti, you know, the program?
AVG Zen?
Yes, Z-E-N.
It's part of their Ultimate series.
Yeah, I don't know about...
Yeah, it's part of the Ultimate series. I've seen it as an Android app.
Yeah, what it does basically is when it says, I can connect other devices with one thing. Like, for example, when I opened up the icon for AVG Zen, it says antivirus free, yeah. Unprotected. It's got the green there. But then the other stuff is matted out. It's PC tune-up. Not tuned up, HMA Pro VPN, installed.
It's almost an ad for AVG's other products.
Basically. Yeah. You can uninstall it with Revo.
With Revo?
Yeah. There's no uninstall for it itself easily, but Revo will do it.
And will this Zen program slow anything down on my operating system?
Not very much at all.
Yeah.
But what it basically does is, as Steve said, it's essentially a thing that lets you connect other programs in.
And it warned you were going to do that on the text that you probably didn't read on the installer program.
Well, that's right.
Yeah. And that's what we've been talking about for the past almost 2 hours. Finger.
Yep. And you could have, yeah, there's a custom install where you can turn that off.
Now, how can I turn it off now? Is there a setting somewhere, either in Zen or in the
Revo menu? Revo will do it.
Yeah,
Revo will do it?
Yep.
You'd have to uninstall the whole program, and then you can just
Uninstall the whole program, then reinstall
that includes,
it without...
That includes the protection, that includes the main AVG, right?
Right. Uninstall everything
mm-hmm.
With Revo. That's the only way you're going to get rid of it.
Okay.
And then, because there's some registry entries. And then when you reinstall it, pay attention.
Okay. I mean, as far as I can tell, this came after I did after an update. I mean, it updates regularly, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden, I got Zen, a second icon.
It updated the app as well as updating your virus definition.
Mm-hmm. Right,
snuck it in there.
All right, gentlemen, thank you.
Yep. All right, have fun.
And it's one of the reasons we say, you know, read every message. You know, turn off things you may not want, toolbars, things like that. We don't necessarily blame them for putting an ad in for their other products when you get a free thing. They have to make their money somehow. But it is a little annoying that it's...
At least they do tell you and give you the chance to avoid it.
Yeah.
Before we go back to the phones, let me go back to Jerry, who was asking about Mint. There is a website called alternative2.net. And you can pretty much type in the name of any program, and it will show you alternatives... for Windows and Linux and Mac, if they exist. And so any program that you care to use, you can find those alternatives. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Paul from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Paul. What's up?
Yeah, hi. First on this Mint thing, you know, Mint is also a name used by Quicken for one of their financial programs.
Yes,
it's
this
a little confusing sometimes.
Yeah. This is Linux Mint. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, I think the first time, and I've been using computers for over 30 years now, I finally got some malware on my system. Had a dickens of a time getting it off. I was able to get it off with a program called Bitdefender, which I found useful. The name of the Trojan, one of them was qhost.gen, and the other one was simi 319276. But I just thought I'd put a plug in there for Bitdefender. It does work.
Thanks. That's what we like to hear.
Yeah. I was wondering why Avast and Malware Bytes didn't get rid of that. I run them very regularly.
Yeah, here's the thing. In general, as programs become more popular, the virus writers write against them. So, for example, most places won't release a virus unless it'll get around Norton and McAfee. And now some of them are adding AVG and a couple of others into the mix. So often when Windows Defender is notorious. But so for a lot of them, you have to go to a secondary or even tertiary program that's not well known but still very good, like Bitdefender, to fix the problem.
But so with these producers of malware and ransomware, why can't the FBI or even the NSA, if necessary, get together and get a few of these guys, have the equivalent, don't take this literally, the equivalent of a public hanging, and that might serve to discourage some of this stuff.
Because it's called the worldwide.
Yeah. Most of them are not in America. In the US. And, and the money is so huge and so easy to get. That there's almost no incentive. And you read about people, you know, the Interpol and agencies busting hacking groups every couple of weeks or so. But there's just another guy to pick up where they left off.
Well, yeah, and there's law enforcement around most countries. They could care less.
Listen, this again is going overboard, but maybe a drone strike might work wonders on this.
Yeah. Well, the problem, of course, is they're also scattered.
Yeah.
You know, they don't like all come to work in a building somewhere.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, the problem, unfortunately, is, you know, we all believe might makes right and the person with the biggest bomb wins. But the reality is that that's not going to work this time because it's very much like terrorists. They're not all gathered in one place. They're not all susceptible to being managed in that way, you know. You have to go after them piecemeal, and you have to devise new methods of control.
Okay, well, I'll take my frustrations out by doing some extra exercising. So thanks very much.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an issue that we've seen over and over and over again in all kinds of things. When something is decentralized and distributed, we find that it often has that any entity like a government has a much harder time stopping it because they can power down and pop up somewhere else in a matter of minutes. So even if they get targeted, often enough, you will find them, disappearing and then reappearing somewhere else pretty quickly.
And, you know, one of the biggest targets was like the Pirate Bay. And for years, the police would shut it down and they'd laugh at the takedown notices they'd get, and they'd pop up in another country that had different laws. And it took forever, almost literally in computer terms, it took forever for the owners of the company to get found and prosecuted. But that still didn't stop it. Someone else picked it up, and you can still find it to download illegal software.
Right, because all they have to do is put it in a country where they don't have any extradition treaties, and now you're done. All right, quickly back to the phones. Our next caller is Pat from Batavia, New York. What's up, Pat?
Well, a couple things. First of all, I did try that Speccy program that one of the listeners called in.
Right.
And it provides a lot of information. Now, I knew I didn't have a lot of memory in my computer. It said I had 1.75 gigabytes total physical.
Yep.
But then I also have something called total virtual memory.
Yep.
And apparently I'm using 3.3 gigabytes of that.
Yep.
So that, I guess people would be surprised, you know, because I didn't, you know, design my machine. I just bought it from somebody.
Right. Here's the deal. A computer needs a certain amount of memory in order to run. If you don't have enough physical memory, it starts using pieces of the hard drive as memory.
Okay.
The problem is the hard drive is millions of times slower than physical memory. So if you could, so you're using 2 gigs approximately of physical memory and 3 or 4 gigs, whatever the number was.
Yeah, 3.3, right.
Right, right. So call it three, call it four because there's always slop.
Yeah.
So if you had 6 gigs of RAM, you would probably not be using your swap memory, the hard drive space, and your machine would run that much faster because it would never have to go to the hard drive for memory stuff.
Oh. Very interesting.
Of course,
a plug-in for that program. And also, it tells us way more about my computer than I'd have to be Googling all these terms that it tells me about. And one more thing, if my calendar is right, aren't we about coming up time for the Rochester Googles?
First Thursday of every month. I again have to miss it this month because I am teaching.
Still teaching? Okay.
Yeah.
That's That's the radio station holiday party that night, too.
Yep. We'll miss that as well,
unfortunately. So you got three things to do that night.
You're right. And the one that will get done is teaching. But, yeah, we meet at Rochester, at St. John's Meadows. It's called Rochester Googles, and we meet at St. John's Meadows. Thanks a lot, okay. Pat.
Okay. We'll see you sometime.
Yes, bye. You will. All right. That's it. We are done for another week. Man, that hour went fast. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and truly gratefully supported by members, Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Have a great week, everybody.